Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. The U.S. beat El Salvador 1-0 and Costa Rica beat Panama 1-0 as well later at night. So the headline here is positive. No doubt about it. Those were the two most desirable outcomes of Thursday night's action. And they give us a four-point cushion on the couch that is automatic qualification for the World Cup. Greg, how you doing?
Couldn't be better, Bells. That's a six-point evening, and I'm looking forward now to the upcoming freezing evenings that we're going to be looking forward to.
Yeah, somewhat freezing, you know, freezing with a small F in Hamilton, Ontario, and then capital F freezing in St. Paul. But let's talk about the game that was last night. Let's start with the positives. I'll start with the positives. About 3.00 in expected goals for the U.S., 0.17 for El Salvador, and no shots on target. I thought Weah looked really good. I thought McKennie, especially in the first half, looked really, really good. Thought Walker Zimmerman looked good. And I'm sure you thought Jesus Ferreira looked good, right?
Why are you framing it like that? You're not going to take a stance this early. You're going to wait.
I just don't want to do all the talking myself.
I'm going to have to cheese out your actual conclusion on Jesus Ferreira.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I it's no secret that I enjoy the aesthetic of the way Jesus Ferreira plays. And I thought that he actually did have a couple of, like, I don't know if I want to call him uncharacteristic, like, moments of not being polished, but he did have some sloppy moments. But I also thought there were just a lot of the things that I enjoy watching about him on display in that game. And I thought he was really effective. And, you know, I'm a big, it's about creating chances, kind of a evaluator of performance. And Jesus Ferreira was involved in a lot of things that lead to goals. So I was happy with what he was doing. I'm interested to see how Berhalter sort of rates him based on how Berhalter chooses to line up in the next two matches.
Yeah. Well, in the post-game press conference, Berhalter said exactly the same thing as you just said. It's we'd like him to finish those chances, or particularly the one on the flicked header from Weah, but he was creating chances. He was getting into opportunities to score. He said he'd be worried if he wasn't, and he was, so he was happy with his performance.
So, and I'll just say again too, like, as I've said plenty of times for regular listeners here, like, for me, saying that a guy when you say he needs to finish those, or we want him to finish more of the chances, that is essentially just meaningless to me. It's like gibberish. It's like soccer gibberish. It's like, we need this baseball player to get more base hits. He only got one base hit yesterday. We'd like him to get three base hits. Like, you just look at the long run chance conversion, and more importantly, basically chance creation. So, for Jesus Ferreira, for a performance where you're trying to predict how he's going to do next time, that is a really good night. He missed. We'll get into chronology, I'm sure, and talk about the misses. But there is no magic formula for guys who just, like, always finish their chances. That simply doesn't exist. You just want guys who create chances in volume. You want your team creating chances in volume.
How coolly rational of you. I guess I agree, but I do. You know, I think we can mourn the fact that he missed that chance. Like, so maybe he gets another chance just like that, where he either has to, like, throw his head at it or some other part of his body or his left foot, and he chooses to do none of those and tries to do it with the outside of his boot, converting a 0.7 XG chance into something much less than a 0.7 XG chance. I don't know. I mean, I know that what you're saying is correct. I just can't, my heart can't quite get with it.
Tough, right? It's tough. That's the human side, especially. I mean, we got the result. We got the points. If we don't, as anyone who watched the World Cup loss to Belgium knows, like, you spend a cycle or longer always saying what could have been if Wando had just converted that chance that only gets converted one out of three times in real life. You know, like, oh, it's impossible not to run that back through your head over and over and over again. But when we actually get the win, on the emotional level, it just doesn't sting quite as much.
No, it doesn't sting. It doesn't sting at all. And that's the bottom line, is it was a 6-point window, like you said. I mean, a 6-point night. And that's a big deal. That Costa Rica win over Panama, which was, I don't know, a disjointed affair, a weird game. That was a huge result, obviously.
And I'll throw this in there just in case we are adding any listeners between podcasts. We're obviously very interested in the Panama results this window because Panama is our closest competition for the automatic qualification line. So Panama losing was very important to get that cushion and sort of lengthen that a little bit. They have a home match coming up on Sunday while we are away to Canada. So that 4-point cushion could shrink this weekend.
Yep.
If it doesn't, we are basically home and free. Not to jinx anything, Bells, but I mean, we're basically home and free anyway.
Yeah, I think we're in a good spot. And anybody who's saying, well, Costa Rica now is a threat to catch up to us, I'm going to say, probably not. Probably not. Costa Rica is not very good. Panama was hard done by in that game to not get a result. And it's hard to see Costa Rica getting a bunch of results to close out the season. And I think, you know, we may struggle there like we always do in San Juan. I'm sorry, it's not San Juan. We may struggle there like we always do in San Jose, but I don't think they're gonna be a threat. Panama is the threat. They're a better team than Costa Rica. Should we do the lineups?
I was going to say, let's just, while we're there, do a full sort of CONCACAF recap. Canada won against Honduras at Honduras. So they maintain their sort of stranglehold on first place. They're ahead of us by a point. Mexico won against Jamaica. 10-man Jamaica. Jamaica took a red card, and it was nervous for Mexico for a bit there. So Mexico sort of hold their spot in the lineup as well. And it very much looks like Mexico, Canada, and the United States will be the three automatic qualifiers. Again, not saying those chickens have officially hatched, but there's definitely like cracking in the eggs.
Yeah. Although, you know, watching the game last night, and even though we did rack up a lot of expected goals, it doesn't, you know, that performance against El Salvador doesn't make it look like that game against Panama in the last window is going to be so easy. Because I do think Panama is a tougher opponent than El Salvador. So yeah, the chickens haven't hatched. I don't know. We can talk in circles about this as much as we want. It's like, we just got to keep winning. And the window of opportunity for the teams below us has to keep getting smaller until it's just not possible anymore. So,
all right, let's talk about the gentleman who expanded the cushion for us last night.
Yep, it was Matt Turner in goal, Serginho Dest, Walker Zimmerman, Chris Richards, and Anthony Robinson across the back line. Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Yunus Musah in the midfield, and then Weah on the right wing, Pulisic on the left wing, and Jesus Ferreira at striker. The only surprises. I mean, the only surprise was Ferreira starting over Pepe, and I did not have a problem with it personally. I know you did not.
I don't. And I also want to make sure that I'm not like trying to make it sound like I think Jesus Ferreira is a much, much better option than Ricardo Pepe. I am definitely on record saying throw all seven of the forwards sort of in contention in a hat and pick a name out. My personal preference is Ferreira just because I really enjoy watching him play soccer.
Yeah, he's a lock picker. He's a lock picker. El Salvador started with Mario Gonzalez in goal, Brian Tamacas, Eduardo Acosta, Roberto Dominguez, and Alexander Larin across the back line, Darwin Seren, Brian Landaverde, and youngster Enrique Hernandez, the Dutch El Salvadoran, in the midfield. And then Alex Roldan, Christian Gil, and Jairo Enriquez across the front line. I guess there are no big surprises there. Enrique Hernandez is kind of a player who's come on strong for El Salvador. I don't think he was terribly involved in the first window, but otherwise no big surprises there. Now, any thoughts on the lineup, Greg?
On the US
besides,
lineup?
Yeah.
I didn't know if Richards was going to start, and I don't know what that signals. I don't know if that's just sort of like preemptively resting Miles to make sure he's full speed against Canada, because there are all those sort of other considerations in play in these windows. So, and I also don't know if that means maybe, you know, Walker Zimmer might not have played if we weren't going to rotate Miles. I don't know who Miles would come in for if Miles is the presumptive actual starter in a full strength team. So Richards was another question mark. And then there was still the question mark of Weah's fitness. So it was exciting to see. I know Berhalter had hinted at it in the lead up that Weah looked, you know, fit to start. And so I'm obviously also very happy when I see Tim Weah's name in starting 11.
Yeah, me too. I guess Richards over Robinson, Miles Robinson, is the only other sort of surprise. But it seems like the rest of the lineup kind of writes itself. And it was a lineup that I was really happy with. And we're going to talk about the action and Pulisic's impotence and our trouble generating danger on set pieces and Ferreira's performance in more depth and the fall off in performance from the team as a whole late in the second half. But first, a little housekeeping. Thank you to everyone who has signed up for the Patreon in the past week or so. That's been really encouraging. Please consider joining if you haven't, and I'm happy to answer questions. Our email is scuffedpod@gmail.com. And there are many other ways to reach us. And also a more fun bit of housekeeping. This insane, potentially sub-zero game in St. Paul is still happening outdoors on Wednesday, as far as we know. And we still plan to be there for our pregame bash and a watch party for those not attending the game. The doors will open at 2 p.m. at Lake Monster Brewing. Google it. It's a 10-minute walk and two light rail stops from Allianz Field. It's a good location. And a club that's close to my heart, Minneapolis City Soccer Club, will be there with us. The Crows, that's their mascot, will be in attendance. Kick It Forward, an organization that builds mini pitches across our home state of Iowa, is buying beers for an as yet undetermined number of people who show up. So that's a nice treat. And we'll try to get rondos going in the parking lot. You're going to bring a ball, right, Greg?
I will have a ball with me. It's going to be tough if you might need to appropriately plan footwear for rondos that might not necessarily be appropriate for attending the stadium in -5 degree weather.
Oh yeah. I'm going to rondo in my boots for sure. And I don't mean soccer boots. And finally I do hold out hope that we can do some collective singing. I'm going to arrange a bass section, especially if it looks like a 9-point window is within reach. So we'll see. And then after some of us leave for the game, there will be a watch party at Lake Monster Brewing. So I see no excuse for missing this get together if you are within 100 miles of the Twin Cities. Let's get to the timeline.
Here we go.
Early on, we're pressing high, of course. And, I thought right in the first minute, we got a good sense of what McKennie was up to last night. He wins the ball coming back towards his own goal on the sideline and then combines with Adams and Dest, and Weah gets fouled coming back to the ball. And I also noticed that El Salvador was doing a little pressing. Did you notice that?
Yeah. And it's I don't know if I would even go as far as to call it pressing. It was a high line of confrontation. So it's kind of like, if there's a gray area between those two things, they were not dropping back, right? They weren't dropping deep. They were setting up in their shape. I didn't think they were necessarily like setting traps, to try to take it, or more importantly, any time they did seem like they would start to have us buttoned up, like we so easily just navigated around the defender closest to the ball. I don't know if you noticed that. It seemed like, that was the trend for me, the big trend of the game. And the one that I worry about the most, because I feel like it's the least likely to carry over against better teams.
You mean the way McKennie and Musa could just skip by people?
Yeah, almost anyone was doing it. Dest was doing it. It's like they had us dead to rights. Like all of our passing options were taken away. The defender on our ball carrier was like in position to make a tackle, and we would just groan up our way past them. Like it was several positions where it was just sort of a man against boys, and it was just almost like too easy. And I love watching it, but that is my like one concern, is that this was so easy that it's going to give us like this false sense of confidence that we can do this, that in another game, because there were times too where we did kind of lose it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
And even then it was like, okay, but El Salvador just doesn't do anything with it because they're not very good. Like that is sort of just the bottom line for however courageous it is that Hugo has them playing the way they're trying to play. They're not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say any false confidence we had from that first half should have been erased by the second half. I mean, I thought McKennie himself was pretty sloppy in the second half, and you know, Dest had several, I think, messy touches. Musa maybe a couple, but Adams also was a little bit untidy. So I hope that's not a something that we take away from that game that we're going to be able to skip by people all the time. Because McKennie would skip by the first guy, and then as the game went on, you know, he would maybe even skip by the second guy, but then the third guy he would lose it, or you know, he'd have to poke it away to somebody else or something.
Right, like you'd end up having to, even though you weren't necessarily losing it, you were definitely like breaking up any rhythm that we might have been establishing. So the actual movement of the ball and switching the point of attack was slowing down, even though we were maybe like embarrassing a couple of El Salvador defenders.
Yeah. And then, of course, Pulisic was famously not even skipping by the first guy for the most part.
Yeah, that was the other big contrast, was while McKennie and Musa and Dest and even Adams would for sure just like groan up their way past a guy, and then the next guy would show up. They could, all of our guys were using their body to just continue to protect the ball until they could either release it to somebody, even if that broke up the rhythm of the play, or then beat the next guy in a similar way of just leveraging their way past him. That was not Pulisic. Pulisic was like trying to beat a player, didn't really seem to have a plan. Even if he beat one guy, the second guy would come and like clean it up, and we lost it. Like we lost, it was an actual turnover.
Yeah, Pulisic.
Within a minute of the chronology, we have now, I think, identified the key themes of the entire game.
Right, and I'll have to decide how much of this chronology to get into because it's very detailed. It's very long and detailed. So the 3:30 mark, a nice work from McKennie to rescue a little bit of an Adams hospital ball, pokes it to Musa to Pulisic, and then Pulisic tries to play sort of between the lines to Ferreira. Takes a poor touch and it goes back the other way. 4:45, we've got Pulisic running into Robinson as he skips by a guy on the left. So Robinson just sort of hesitates and then blows by a guy, and he kind of trips and he kind of runs into Pulisic there, which is,
they slammed into each other. Like they slammed into each other. That was nuts.
I was worried that one of them or both of them was going to be seriously hurt by that, but it did sort of seem like their chemistry in a microcosm a little bit. I don't know what exactly Pulisic was trying to do there, coming back to the ball. I don't know.
The camera angle was strange on it, right? Because they like zoomed in on Robinson, and suddenly like it's a smash cut into a smash collision, and I wonder if like it kind of looked like maybe like a football play where Pulisic was maybe getting blocked into the runner is what I was.
That's very well could be the case. So should we keep going in the timeline, or should we get into Pulisic right now, since we've already sort of thrown a little bit of shade?
I think him smashing into Anthony Robinson is the perfect time to dissect his game a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so let's start with what Berhalter said after the game. He was asked about Pulisic's lack of effectiveness, and he said, yeah, we'd like him to be more. I'm definitely paraphrasing here, but yeah, we'd like him to be more effective. I'm happy with his effort tonight. One thing that he should have done better is stretch the back line. And he was dropping too deep, and that was forcing Anthony to be too deep, and it was also forcing Musa to be too deep. And so, you know, when Berhalter says something like that, my response is, okay, that sounds like a good explanation for what was going wrong with Pulisic. Why was he doing that? Like, does he not understand the instructions, or is he not getting the instructions, or is he just straight up disobeying the instructions?
Right. Because it wasn't a one-off, right? That wasn't one-off. He was constantly coming all the way back to pick the ball up off the center back sometimes, like the way like Michael Bradley used to do. So it was not just like, oh, a couple of times he did this. It was constant.
Yeah. And then you combine that with him not being able to beat anybody, or maybe, you know, like you said, maybe he beats the first guy, but not the second guy. And you got a recipe for a left-sided attack that was really hard to watch last night. In contrast to the right side, which was really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question. I think it was pretty obvious in real time that Pulisic was the one struggling the most. I think it's also just very obvious, you know, because of the other overwhelming information we have about our player pool, that Christian Pulisic is our most dangerous player, you know, in a sense. So it's one of those things where, like, you could pull him, you could bench him because he's struggling, or you could say he is really struggling out there. At any moment, he is capable of, you know, doing three people and creating a goal out of nothing or creating a chance out of nothing. So I'm like sympathetic to being like looking at our bench and saying, okay, he's really struggling. You still just leave him in. You just roll the dice with the player with the talent that he has, and you leave him in there and you try to fix things for the next time out, or you try to fix him in real time if you can. But it's still more just like you got to find a way with the chalkboard, with the tape, on the training ground to get more out of him.
Yeah. I mean, we've been saying this for a long time. We need to get more out of Pulisic. He hasn't. I mean, this has become conventional wisdom now. It was kind of, you know, you could get crucified for saying this 6 months ago, but he has not been that good for the national team for a long time. He did score the game winner against Mexico. He did score two game winners against Mexico in the last 12 months. Those are huge goals. That's important. But like moment by moment in games, he's not been that effective for the U.S. Now here's, I'm not saying this is for sure true, but I'm saying it's something we should consider, which is that, are his, you know, he's had like 11 soft tissue injuries in the last 2 years and, something like that. And it looks to me like he is not blowing by people the way he was 2 years ago, or let's say Project Restart Pulisic after,
there you go,
like in the middle of the pandemic,
right up until he did his hammy against Arsenal, right? That was the end of it.
Yeah. And then he, you know, he's had some flashes since then too, but I wonder, you know, that him not doing the things that fit well within the larger scheme of the team, which is kind of what was going on last night for whatever reason, is a lot more forgivable when you feel like at any moment he can beat three guys and create a goal out of nothing. And I'm watching him play now and I don't see that same electricity, you know, pulsing off of him that I feel like I used to see. And I do wonder if, like, I don't know, maybe he needs some rest or maybe he has, like, you know, lost a step. I'm not saying it's true, but.
Well, it's a worry, right? It's a,
yeah.
It's a sort of creeps in your head and you say, all right. And would another 30 degrees Fahrenheit help him to not have these soft tissue injuries in this week? Because I also think about those things. And when we're talking about explosiveness, like it's harder to explode out of an ice block. So I like have real worries about that. And I guess I don't have a good answer. I'm very happy that during his struggles, we have had the kind of performances we've had from other attackers, because that has been, you know, very obviously the difference in our World Cup qualifying campaign. Last cycle, everything was Pulisic. All of the goals, not that he didn't have help, but he was involved in basically every single goal we scored in the cycle. And now we've had to play without him a lot. And even when he plays, he's sort of been hit or miss, a lot of miss, yet we've still had plenty of attacking firepower. And that has just been huge. And it's mostly in the shape of a Tim Weah.
Yeah. And Gio Reyna's waiting in the wings. I don't know that he, you know, some people have made the point that Pulisic is just not a player who is comfortable as a line stretching, you know, making runs in behind winger. Like that's not his game. I'm not sure I agree with that, although I would say that more or less fits what we have seen from him as a player. Like, can he be coached into it? I don't know. But if that's a problem with Pulisic, it's just as much of a problem with Gio Reyna. Gio Reyna is not an off-ball merchant the way Tim Weah is. He's an on-ball. He's an on-ball guy. He's a get the ball to my feet and I'll do something kind of player. So I don't know what the solution is over there on left wing. Matt Doyle. Well, go ahead. I'll quit jabbering.
No. Doyle's take is good. I'll just run with it now. I think Doyle's basically just saying flip him over to the right. Don't have him creep inside from the left like most right footers want to cut in. Put him on the right. Simplify sort of his job. We've got Dest. You could put Dest over there, who's very good at interpreting space, so he could react very well off of Pulisic. I'm totally just taking like Doyle's take. This isn't me adding my own. He's got a pretty thorough examination of this possibility. Because Anthony Robinson on the left is very predictable. Like, he wants to do one thing. He's not going to interpret a bunch of space. He wants to get around that sideline and go. Sergiño Dest can do a lot of different things. So he's more of a, like a scalpel that you can sort of deploy in a lot of different ways. So he could fit very well with Pulisic, where there isn't a lot of chemistry over there on the left at the moment. And then Tim Weah, I will kind of interject here and add on to what Doyle's saying. Tim Weah is an absolute, like, physics, geometry, space merchant. Like, he gets the most out of everything in every situation. So I have no issues with him figuring it out. And we've seen him on the left against Costa Rica in that home game. And even more so against Jamaica in his cameo in his first World Cup qualifying appearance in the October window from the left, creating all kinds of danger in like a 15-minute sub appearance. So I absolutely think it's worth trying, testing out Pulisic to the right, way on the left. And then the last thing I'll add, I know I've kind of covered Doyle's and my take on that flip. I think Gio Reyna is a totally different player, though. Even though he likes to come in and play on the ball, he can do that in the midfield, whereas Pulisic can't. Pulisic comes in the midfield, tries all his fancy stuff, and just gets wrecked over and over. Sometimes it's a foul, sometimes it's not. When you dribble into three bodies, a lot of times they can muscle you out without fouling you. Gio Reyna is not that. Gio Reyna will go into that forest of bodies, and he will come out the other way with maybe the defenders on the ground.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe Reyna does make more sense on that left side. You know, if the way a Pulisic switcheroo doesn't work out.
Yeah. And again, it might be where Reyna can play either side and Weah can play either side. Aaronson seems comfortable on either side. So it's like, we're just trying to keep Pulisic on the left, but I am 100% in favor of trying him out on the right. Obviously, there's so much more that he has in store that we aren't getting right now.
Hopefully, yeah. What about for? I mean, we're jumping all over the place here. We're getting way out of order, but like, what about for Sunday, 6-point Sunday in Hamilton, Ontario? Do you want to just switch him for that game and have Pulisic on the right, way on the left, or?
I'd take that in a heartbeat. I mean, again, there's so many considerations. Weah's just back from injury. He had just started once for Lille coming in. So he might, while it was great that we could start him yesterday, he might not be fit to start another game right away. I kind of just am not that bothered about it because there's reasons to think that running Pulisic back could be bad for him fitness-wise. We also know that he could just sort of be that stubborn dribbling turnover machine. Like, that is now at least a real possibility we have to reckon with when we put him into games. So out of all of the wingers we have on the roster to start the game, I'm just like, pick two, have them work their socks off in the Canadian cold on the turf. Make sure the game is close and then choose your guy for the end game. Last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
That's where we try to get the points.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea. I was going to save this to the end, but I like the idea of starting Jordan Morris, not because he's so good, but because he, you know, he just seems like we could use him to bludgeon the other team. He would stretch the back line. He is used to playing on artificial turf. But let's get back to the timeline.
8 minutes.
We're 4 minutes in. Yeah. So we stopped at the Pulisic Robinson collision. In the 5:40 mark, El Salvador gets in behind on a throw-in. We just get cut open on a restart. I watched it back a few times. I'm not exactly sure who to blame, but anyway, it's a good cut back to the penalty marker, and Dest intervenes to snuff it out.
So this trend, I think, played out a couple of times, and it's like it's Anthony Robinson. I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm saying that what's noticeable to me is he ends up defending really far up the sideline, like farther ahead, much closer to El Salvador's goal than like the ball is. So he leaves a ton of room back there, and it becomes like one of Musa or Chris Richards' job to defend in that space in his stead, and it looked like they just weren't always sure who should go. So they definitely didn't have it sorted like ahead of time. So the ball gets put into that space and then they're trying to figure it out on the fly. And there's like these little moments of hesitation, which are costly. It's costly in just your mentality as you're going out to close down when you weren't fully committed from the start. At least that's how it works with goalkeepers, like that little hesitation before you go. So that's kind of what I was picking up on. And I think that's kind of what played out here was a little uncertainty about whose job it was to defend the play and then poor execution once we went out.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Richards was a little hesitant to come out for sure. And then the ball got pulled back inside of him, inside of his body. 8 minute mark. Good from McKennie to combine with Adams on our right side, who plays it to Dest, and we spring Weah down the line. He can't beat his guy, and it's a goal kick. But that's a harbinger of things to come. There's a lot of this just lovely action down the right side. And I have ninth minute. McKennie is absolutely dealing, fouled after doing a couple guys. Ref should have given advantage on that play. There's a couple of these in the game, I thought. Zimmerman finds Weah over the top and down that right side again, and Weah wins a corner.
Let me jump in on that because I'm sort of the resident Brooks defender on the internet, certainly, and on these podcast airwaves. Zimmerman was rough with his distribution, his long distribution at Jamaica in the 1-1 draw, and I think that really hurt us. John Brooks is very good at long distribution from the back. Zimmerman was much, much better today, last night, like way better. Even his service that wasn't going directly to us that we would win was in a spot where it forced El Salvador to make a play on it, and then we were just cleaning up second balls. So that was a huge improvement from our long distribution, and it was mostly Zimmerman. I don't think Richards had much long distribution. He didn't attempt much in that Jamaica game. But this was definitely a mark in Zimmerman's favor in this match.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought almost all the incisive passing from our center backs came from Zimmerman, maybe 100% of it. And it's not really a knock on Richards because I think he was pretty steady back there. But he, like you said, he didn't try that much.
I also do think, and I think this was the case against Jamaica a little bit, I do think that El Salvador were funneling the ball back there to Zimmerman. So I thought that was like an interesting thing to note, that he tended to be the guy collecting it after El Salvador sent numbers over. They were like shadowing Adams a little bit with their two forwards. One of them would shadow Adams, and they just wouldn't really care if Zimmerman had it, and they would just kind of watch him, you know, walk up the field a little bit and then pick his pass out. And I think that was like by design on El Salvador's part. And Zimmerman, you know, essentially like executed very well for what they were giving us.
And I could be wrong about this, but I thought I perceived that our plan was to funnel the distribution through Richards early. Like there were times when Zimmerman would just play it back to Richards, and Richards was the one who was trying to carry it forward, and it didn't result in any, you know, incisive passes between the lines. But at least at first, it seemed like that's what we were trying to do. And El Salvador was, like you said, El Salvador was trying to stop us from doing that. Well, problem solved. Zimmerman just started playing some good passes.
Yeah. And if that becomes a reliable feature of Zimmerman's play, I mean, we are really cooking at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
hard to know. This is El Salvador at home.
this is something that kind of went by unnoticed, it seemed like, in the broadcast. But on the ensuing corner kick after that Zimmerman ball to Weah down the right sideline, it's a good corner from Pulisic. He hit several good corners this time. And it was a free header for Yunus Musah. I mean, free header's a little bit, you know, makes it sound better than it was, but he was not marked and he had a chance to head it, and he didn't do much with it. That was our first shot of the game.
Yeah, it was free in the sense that he didn't have a mark on him. It was really difficult, I think, in the sense that it looked like maybe it skimmed right off of somebody, you know, 3 yards before it got to him. So that's where you get that like zero reaction from the guy, and the ball essentially just hits him. Like
that's what it looked like.
Football tip drill. So I think that's what it was, but you're right. There was no replay of like, oh, guy alone in the box, ball falls to him.
He headed it, I think, on frame, but it just hit a defender like in, you know, in its core somewhere.
Cold weather noticeably reduces reaction time. I'm just going to throw that out there. That is a real really? Thing. Real thing.
Because your brain is overloaded with the question of survival.
It's fighting so hard to make sure blood is going to every part of your body.
11:20 mark, I have Adams intervening very nicely to snuff out a little slip ball into the box after a switch from Hernandez to Enriquez on the left wing. A nice play from El Salvador. And then Enriquez kind of stands his guy up, his guy being Dest, and then tried to slip it in behind for a runner. And Adams saw it. You know, it's funny, like McKennie was closer to the play than Adams was, but it was like, but Adams came in like, oh yeah, this is definitely my job to cover this. And he draws a foul. 12 minute mark, McKennie so clean on the half turn, this time in the left channel, and he springs Ferreira, who stands up his guy. This is a first good moment from Ferreira, and plays it back to the top of the box to Pulisic, who honestly does not look dangerous. So this is another thing. Where Berhalter talks about what we need is Pulisic in the penalty area. That's where he does his damage. And we actually did get Pulisic in the penalty area a few times. I'm not saying he got the ball like at the six, but he was in the penalty area with the ball at his feet.
With some space, and a little bit of space, right?
Yeah. And this was one of those times, and it just didn't look like it was going to come off. And he scuffed the shot. I don't think it was going on frame anyway, but it was blocked. And there you go. That was a nice little opportunity for us.
This is something Donald Norman has pointed out repeatedly. It's that the U.S. has to have like the highest percentage of its shots blocked of any team in CONCACAF. And I don't know if it's a function of like other teams really committing bodies back there, like, you know, desperation defending in any situation to make sure that ball doesn't make its way to the goal. Or if it's us just getting a little bit too rushed. I tend to think it's us getting a little bit too rushed in the final moments and not having the presence of mind to like realize that the shooting situation you have now has caused the defense to scramble desperately. And this is actually the time to look to exploit them. For like the little cutback or the little slip pass, because we do, yep. We have an outrageous number of shots blocked. I know it's really easy and almost ridiculous to like say this Champions League winning player should like, doesn't know enough to cut the ball back against a scrambling defender, but it really might be the case that like when you play a team with the quality drop off that we play in the region compared to like what you're playing against at the higher levels, like there might be more of this scrambling defense that you don't see as often at the highest level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you really slow that play down, Pulisic could have just cut it back to McKennie maybe for like, you know, who looked like he had a window to look at the goal and shoot. But, you know, I mean, that's real Monday morning quarterbacking right there.
I know. I'm going to do it again on another chance too, because it's again on the replay with the benefit of slow motion and watching from, you know, the angle we get on TV, like you just see how this crops up. And like, I'm hoping that we do address this stuff, because this is stuff that if you're thinking about it, doing it on the tape, it might help prepare you mentally to pull it off in the game.
Yeah. So lots of stuff happening here. 12:25, McKennie springs Dest down the right side. His hopeful cross is cut out. There are many hopeful crosses in this game. 13:50, McKennie tries to do a bit too much, but it works out. Pokes it to Dest. Dest's pass to Wea to his right out wide doesn't have the right weight on it, and it's cut out by El Salvador. I did not think, you know, Dest had some good moments, but he did not have a super sharp night, in my opinion. Good in flashes, not peak Dest.
Yeah, though. This opponent is certainly, as we learned throughout the night, this is a perfect opponent for Dest to sort of mixtape his way through a couple of times. Like, he was going to have some of those, and he did, and those are delightful. but even going back to that cross that you'd pointed out just before, where McKennie springs him in and puts him in a little bit, like he's crossing it when there's no one around him. Like, he could very much go in and see if he could mixtape a guy in the box with his pal Tim Wea, you know, in close connection. But it's just like, oh no, we'll just whip it in and hope for the best. We're not even really trying to pick guys out. We're just firing it into the mixer.
Yeah. To our 5'8 center forward, Jesus Ferreira. Okay. In the 16th minute, we get our first pretty good chance. McKennie switches it from the right side to Anthony Robinson on the left wing. And, you know, there's a little bit of a ping-ponging that goes on, but he eventually gets it to Ferreira in the box, who takes I mean, do you want to take this? Because this is really nice.
So the ball gets, like you said, pinballed back out to Anthony Robinson, at which point Ferreira is in his defender's cover shadow. Really intelligent movement to, backpedal away from the goal line into the window that Robinson can hit him into, which, again, this is good movement in the box. So for all the stuff about, oh, he's a false nine, he's not a real nine, he's executing here within 10 yards of the goal in a way that makes us dangerous. Robinson hits a fairly hot pass into his feet, and he, flicks it up. The El Salvador defender comes in to bite really aggressively in that desperation defending mode that I was just talking about. And instead of, smashing it into him, Ferreira takes, another really tidy juggling touch around him and now has a clear look at the goal. The defender actually is going in so wildly that he stabs into Ferreira's plant foot, 100% could have gone down and gotten a penalty. But instead, sticks with it, gets his free shot, and smashes it with his left foot just over the goal at the near post, trying to roof it. So, again, as a Ferreira fan, I really enjoy watching that level of execution and technique. I don't judge the strikers when they miss these chances. It's more about creating it. And for me, only Jesus Ferreira in our pool of strikers is creating that chance.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Thing is, I've played a lot of soccer in my life, and I've always been a really bad finisher, and I judge myself for that, for not being good at even if I make a nice play and get around somebody and I sky it over, I'm like, well, that's just a lack of concentration, Bells, You need to meditate more.
Right. And so what it always comes back to is if it was just purely concentration as the root reason this happened, then there would be those players who are just excellent concentrators who destroy the XG that all of the bad concentrators diminish. You know what I mean? But that's just not the case. Everyone in the data pool, in the data sample who takes shots in professional soccer games, finishes them,
regresses
at a pretty terrible rate. It's just always lower than you think. Whatever you think of as a gimme, almost, because we're going to come up to another one, which is just an absurdly high chance of conversion. But this one is not that high of a chance. It's a really good looking shot in a soccer game. It goes down as a very good chance, but it's still not a gimme. I will say it creates an interesting contradiction. For the miss later on, where people are like, oh, well, he's rusty, because obviously I was jumping in on how Jesus Ferreira doesn't get rusty because he's made out of silk. But you kind of can't have it both ways. The touches he had to create that shot, for me, kind of signify that rust isn't really the issue here. His touches to get this shot off were just as clean as you can possibly get.
Okay. Yeah. It was a really nice action, and too bad he couldn't get it on frame. In the 19th minute, we get our best chance of the game so far, easily. A really nice little combo from Adams and Musa on the left side, and Musa turns and hits a perfect switch for Dest, which I think should not go unremarked upon. It was perfectly in stride. That kind of pass with the right weight to the right foot it really does make all the difference. And Dest is charging forward, and he crosses it. Weah flicks it on with his head from, sort of the near post channel, and it drops for Ferreira on the back post, and he misses it. You guys all saw the play. It was a big miss.
Before we get to the miss, I just want to again talk about how aesthetically pleasing that Musa to Dest exchange was. The ball that Musa hit, and then the camera switch right to Dest as he's taking it in stride, leaping with his first touch to just somehow a hurdler, though, even though he's jumping, he somehow manages to not break stride. Just really good soccer aesthetics. It's a beautiful game to watch sometimes.
It can be. It sure can be. That's what keeps us coming back. And then, Weah, the presence of mind from Weah to just flick it at the back post is really nice too.
Wait. Are you saying that Weah was passing that ball to Ferreira?
I'm saying he was passing it to the back post.
All right. I am very skeptical of that. I feel like Weah was definitely trying to glance that ball inside the far post for a goal. But okay, that's fair. I hadn't even occurred to me that he might just be trying to set up a tap-in.
I mean, yeah, I don't know that he intended to put it there. But, when you're trying to glance a ball to the back post, you're kind of also just hoping that somebody's crashing. I mean, at least that's what the textbook would say, right?
All right, there you go. He could score he could also set up a tap in. Two good outcomes.
As it happened, he set up a tap in, and then Ferreira tried, like I said earlier, tried to outside of the boot it with his right foot, and you know, just got it all wrong. C'est la vie.
Yeah, that's the thing.
We still won the game.
I don't have too much to add to it. Like he just didn't get the touch down. Like he didn't get his right foot over it and tap it into the goal. I know there's like, I think Twellman was saying he's got to use his left. I know you're saying he needs to run through it with his like pubic bone.
But whatever, you know.
But sometimes, I mean, you can miss those too. You could do those things and still miss it. I feel like the technique he chose is a perfectly legitimate one to attempt. He just didn't get over the ball enough to put it in with his right.
Fair enough.
That's that 20th, that one for all the talk about how like it's always a worse chance than you think. That one was not. That came in at like gets finished like 80% of the time.
Yeah. Although the height of it and everything does complicate, and I'm not sure XG really, you know, depending on which model you're using, always accounts for all that. But 1945, so the 20th minute, a great entry pass from Zimmerman to Ferreira. Another one of these Zimmerman passes, just worth mentioning. And then in the 21st minute, 22nd minute, Robinson plays a pass that I think he was aiming for Pulisic, but it sort of sliced through to Ferreira. If he meant to pass it to Ferreira, Antony's more of a passing genius than I thought he was. And Ferreira and Weah can't quite connect at the top of the box. I kind of wish Weah had solved that a little better because I thought Ferreira put it into his path. I don't know.
No, I know what you're saying. It's a difficult one for me. Like Ferreira gets the ball to Weah, so it's like he kind of did his job, but Weah didn't have much he could do with the pass coming in from Ferreira.
That's true.
I don't think it means Ferreira hit a bad pass. I just mean it was like, okay, Tim, here's the ball. I'm giving it to you. You're in a dangerous spot. See if you're good enough to do something with it. And sometimes he will be, but it wasn't like a gimme where he had very obvious options with his next move. So it just kind of fizzled.
Yeah. Sometimes the lines just don't fall in pleasant places. You know, when you're receiving the ball at the top of the box. 23rd minute, a poor pass from Adams is worth clocking. He gives it away. It goes completely unpunished by El Salvador. And at this point in the game, I thought the referee was blowing the whistle a lot. And I mean, this has been discussed on some other podcasts and some other writings, but people are talking about how the ref kind of ruined the rhythm of the game by whistling so many fouls, but not calling any yellows to prevent the commission of so many fouls. I just looked it up, and in Costa Rica, so there were 35 fouls called in this game, the most on the night in CONCACAF in the 4-game slate, 34 in Costa Rica, Panama, which was also a pretty disjointed game. And then 31 in Honduras, Canada, and 16 in Mexico, Jamaica. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of all that. Was that an issue in your mind?
The only thing about the referees that stood out to me, and I'm kind of surprised it kind of took off as some people were talking about, was we actually got a couple of like what I would call soft fouls in areas that it was really risky to assume that we were going to get fouls called in our favor. That's the one thing I noticed. There were a couple of times where,
oh really?
Well, we're talking about how Musa and McKennie and even Adams both would just hold on to the ball, supremely confident that El Salvador could not take it. There were times where El Salvador did take it by knocking us down in a way that wasn't an incredibly obvious foul. And when we talk about, you know, like the reputation CONCACAF has, and I think for some U.S. fans, this idea that we get the short end of the stick a lot, there were a couple of like bailout calls that saved us from turnovers deep, deep in our defensive third.
I did not notice those, but I guess that's because I'm such a
hopeless
homer.
Yeah, I totally think that's the case.
Yeah. 24th minute, El Salvador got that set piece from 30 yards that Hernandez hit through the wall, but no trouble for Turner at all. It wasn't even on frame.
I'm going to clock that one too, just because this was 30 degree weather, and Turner catches that ball clean, right? No rebound. He brings it to the ground, nice and tidy. If it's 5 degree weather, like I'm terrified of any attempt to think you're going to bring it in clean. Like I feel like. Just clocking it for St. Paul in that situation in St. Paul, same thing. Like, I don't even want our goalkeepers trying to catch it. I want like strong palms to push that thing out for a throw in.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, ideally, like, the field is supposedly heated. I don't know how much difference that makes.
It's the ball in your fingers. Like, your fingers are going to have zero sensation. And, like, the ball is a rock. And it just won't, like, catch the way that you are used to catching it for the past 15 years of your life.
Yeah, man. Those little black gloves that everybody wears. That is not going to help.
The goalkeeper gloves are even worse, and they're usually like a little bit wet, and it's just, it's,
oh my gosh.
Like it's not going to be like what you are trained to do. All your muscle memory is not going to function the same way at your fingertips.
25th minute, we get, that McKinney backheel in the buildup to Dest. Just lovely to watch. Dest to Weah and down the line, and Weah's cross is cut off. That's the same thing as we've been seeing the whole game, is Weah just running down the channel and then somebody playing a ball that sort of curls in front of him from the outside. So it's not like he's running right up the sideline. It's more in the channel.
And it just feels like so natural, right? It just feels so easy for those guys on the right side to combine in that way. And this is just what I want to see more of when we have the talent advantage that we have in some of these games.
But like Pulisic's not going to make that run. Like, he doesn't make that run.
No disagreement here. He's going in to sort of clutter things up, and he wants the ball at his feet, and then he'll come up with the plan after he gets the ball to his feet.
Is he, if you put him on the right, is he going to make that run on the right?
So I guess,
or is he just going to, well, go ahead.
I think the hope, or the, maybe the assumption, is that his starting position would be different. Like, Weah goes from in to out on the right. And I think the idea might be that Pulisic would wait for the ball out there the way he sort of just wants the ball at his feet. And it might be Sergiño Dest that, like, again, reads where Pulisic is and goes where he needs to go. And Pulisic almost becomes like the wing back, or like the widest player out on the sideline. I don't know for sure if that's sort of what Doyle's thought is, in his great Pulisic flip, dissertation, yeah. But for me, that's something that I could see, is if Pulisic wants to just wait for the ball to come to him, stick him out on the right, and let Dest go wherever he wants to go. Pulisic can't do that on the left. He can't wait out there because Anthony Robinson wants to go out there.
Yeah. And Anthony Robinson's not going to do the underlap. I guess that's what it's going to have to be, because I do not see Pulisic doing that kind of enterprise that Weah does, just constantly making those runs and stretching the defense. Anyway, 29th minute, we get that one good El Salvador chance, and good chances is a little bit of a stretch, because it was like, I don't know, less than a tenth of a goal of XG, but Zimmerman plays an untidy pass to Dest, and Dest loses a duel in that moment, and it's moved across the middle, pushed out wide to Alex Roldan, who has a little bit of space and time, and he just takes a good pull. And it goes a little bit wide. So I think, I don't know, it was like a foot wide or something, like pretty close to the post. And that was the best El Salvador chance of the night.
Yeah, close to the post, close to Turner's hand. No idea if the future Arsenal man would have had it or not. Just notably, because when you said it's the ball, you know, was turned over from Zimmerman, moved to the middle. Bad pass from Zimmerman, right? Like trying to play it up the channel. And then a bad reaction in this instance from Tyler Adams, who kind of gambled to come try to take the ball from El Salvador. And it's another one of those where, like, it's just that confidence that El Salvador can't possibly combine past me because it's El Salvador. And they do combine past him, like, in this case, kind of comfortably. And that's what frees them to shift the ball to the right to Roldan. And then with Adams jumping on that transition moment to try to cut it out early, like, there was no corresponding reaction from Musa to quickly react and defend the space that Adams has left. So we basically just left our six came out, and there was no like natural reaction to go defend, but for Musa to cover for the six. Anthony Robinson again is so far up the field that he's not even an option to come help this defense, which is again by design. But it's something to kind of keep track of. If we do turn over, we are very reliant on Tyler Adams either making the right decision or just executing regardless, because it doesn't seem natural right now that we cover him if he messes up.
Hmm. Interesting. I hadn't thought of that. 30th minute, good spell from El Salvador, and we start to look sloppy, especially Pulisic. He has like two giveaways in 30 seconds here. And then Ferreira is fouled hard by Dominguez. I know, I feel like I'm turning into that annoying guy who always talks about the referee, but it seemed like that should have been a yellow card, and it was not. And, you know, the fouls just kept coming. 30th minute, Musa does well to float it to Dest in kind of in behind wide right, and his cross is cut out again, yielding a harmless corner kick. And then in the 31st minute, Wea is fouled pretty hard by Tamakas, no call, and Tyler Adams has to race in behind to cut out a ball that went in behind. So
really calmly done by Adams, right? And so that's where I'll kind of use this opportunity too, because when he races back to catch that ball, his first touch, you know, on the bouncing ball is to take it out towards the sideline. Did you notice that it felt like we were really reluctant to put the ball back to Turner's feet? Did you get that sense?
I didn't actually.
So I really think this might be the case. And you know, when you were talking about, you know, the way El Salvador is funneling us, it's interesting. El Salvador never ran at Turner when the ball did get to him. They were not interested in trying to like force a mistake from him. But it did seem like when they put our center backs under a little bit of pressure doing their funneling, it seemed like our center backs were also reluctant to use Turner to relieve that pressure and potentially invite El Salvador to go chasing after him. So I thought I noticed that. Now, again, Turner was essentially mistake-free when he did get the ball, but I honestly thought there was a little bit of like us always looking for other solutions rather than going back to him, even if it meant playing into like a short side of the field. It was just like, no, we'll do this. We'll turn our hips back to the short side under a little bit of pressure rather than resetting through our goalkeeper. I don't know. I could be imagining it, but that's what it felt like in real time. Like, oh, I wouldn't even just gone back to the keeper there. Way simpler. But we didn't.
Man, I didn't notice that either. But I did notice that, especially late in the game, this is something we could skip in the timeline later. Turner did have a couple of really nice moments of distribution, particularly that left footed first time hit out to McKennie.
All right. So like my goalkeeper youth coaching background is like, I got like fussy in the moment when he did that because the pressure was coming from that side. So I'm like, oh man, he just hit that ball against the pressure. And that's inviting that like deflected long ball. Like it's like you always, no matter what, you play it safe there. And if the pressure is coming from your right side, you've got to go out to your left side or up the middle to split, but you don't hit it in a way where a guy sticking his leg out could inadvertently almost put the ball in your goal. But yeah, the actual touch ballsy on the pass was great.
Yeah. Okay. We get a good Musa shot blocked in the 34th minute. I'm going to try to go through these fast.
Yeah, let's speed it up.
Ferreira is a little fortunate to get it to Musa, but then he's cutting in kind of like he did for Valencia against Atletico Madrid a little bit, and his shot is blocked. Reference your earlier comment about us getting a lot of shots blocked. Dest's shot kind of coming in the opposite direction from the opposite side a few minutes later is blocked after some good work from Pulisic on the left touchline to back heel release Robinson for a cross that spills to Dest, and then he skitters across the top of the box and pulls one. Again, doesn't beat the first defender. Some lovely interplay from Musa, McKennie, and Pulisic through the middle. Pulisic brings Robinson, cross blocked. 38th minute, poor Adams giveaway on the dribble in the attacking third goes unpunished.
Hey, real quick, just because you're talking about the number of crosses we have blocked, if you can get onto Bob Morocco's Twitter timeline, he has a lot of like great screen grabs from those moments of the crosses where you can see how not all of these are like hopeless situations where we are just firing it in. There are a bunch of them where you should kind of expect the players of the quality we have to essentially pick a guy out, like to identify where the open player is, because we actually outnumber El Salvador at times in the box and put a ball in a spot where we should actually get like a chance at it rather than just being like, oh, well, it got blocked, so we didn't even get like the scramble. Like some of these shouldn't have even been scrambles. Some of these should have been, you should be able to pick this player out here in this situation.
And we weren't doing it, no. I guess is the point. Yeah. We just weren't precise enough. And, you know, right at the end of the half, we get, a chance where McKennie plays it to Pulisic in the middle. So like a nice little pass in the pocket to Pulisic. And then he sort of ricochets past a defender, kind of loses the ball, gets it back, springs Robinson. And this time the cross finds Wea who has time to sort of set up a shot and take it, but this one is blocked too. And I'm like, come on, guys.
This is the one where on Weah's backswing, the El Salvador player like totally sells out from the outside, sliding in to try to block the shot. And it's like, again, in the like hindsight world, like just take a quick touch over to your right, Weah, and then you're just looking at the goalie with every El Salvador defender on the ground selling out for the block.
Right. Right.
I'm hoping that's coming. I'm hoping it's coming where against these, you know, scrambling defenses, we punish them that for that last little desperation play.
Yeah, you need just a little bit of guile and calmness, which, as I said before, I have never had as a soccer player. 49. So the half comes and we open the second half with a strong spell of possession in El Salvador's half. A few more crosses that either hit somebody's head in a kind of a non-threatening way or are blocked. And then the goal comes in the 52nd minute
on a cross.
Yep. Well, really?
Didn't McKinney not really float it across? Are we not calling it a cross?
I'm calling that just a ball in behind. All right,
that's fair.
It's sort of straight. No, you're right.
I was thinking of a different, Jesus Ferreira setup for another play.
Okay. Yeah. I know which one you're talking about. We'll get to it. But McKinney floats it down the channel to Weah. And I think this is a really smart way to get around Larín. He sort of lets it ride through both of them and then runs around him and gets the advantage. And then he sort of comes into a duel with another defender and wins it, leaves the guy on the ground, just gets his foot in first. Or second, I can't really tell. And then takes a shot from short, tight angle. I can't really blame him for shooting. I guess some people have suggested he should have passed to Pulisic there. Okay, maybe. But he takes a shot, and it's saved, but spins up in the air for Ferreira. And I'll explain this. I do really admire this from Ferreira. There's a lot of things he could do in this moment, and he, I think, wisely decides to head it to Robinson, or at least in Robinson's direction. And it's that ball is spinning in such a way, it's kind of hard to generate the power to get it over to Robinson. And Ferreira does everything he can to put as much on that pass as he can. And it's just barely enough to get to him in time. And then Robinson measures it and thrashes it home on the bounce. 1-0 USA. And for me, mostly that was just a feeling of relief. I was I wasn't even feeling joy at that point, just relief.
I mean, there's definitely that relief. I felt like it was coming. It felt like, yes, there it is. Like, this is like, you've had your chances. You've been building these chances. So it definitely felt like it was deserved. Not like some kind of smash and grab. And just watching Weah do two grownups the way he does, like, it's just such a rewarding feeling to watch him play soccer. I don't know how to explain it.
And I think it should be noted. I mean, you were saying earlier, El Salvador is not that good. I think Larín and Tamacas are pretty good fullbacks, you know? And so, yeah, that's definitely a grown up that he did there. So 55th minute, we have two more chances that come in quick succession in the first 5 minutes after the goal. I'll give the build up on this one. There's a kind of a poor McKinney giveaway that goes unpunished in our half. And El Salvador sort of bails us out by playing a really bad pass across the field, and Robinson just steps into it and charges forward. He has Weah, a big passing window to pass to Weah.
Why did he have such a big passing window, Bells?
I don't know.
It was Ferreira.
Because Ferreira was moving out of that space.
Ferreira at the last second like broke across and brought that center back like three steps over to open up that window to Weah, which I was really, again, he's a clever player. He's not just like a midfielder disguised as a forward.
I guess this shows how much of an unreliable narrator I am, because if Pepe had done that, I probably would have noticed it. But since Ferreira did it, I didn't notice. But I totally get it. And then Robinson's pass to Weah, if it's a little better, Weah's in on goal, but it's not a very good pass. It's a little bit behind him. So it gets circulated back to McKinney. And And then McKinney crosses it to Ferreira, and Ferreira makes a good cushion header down to Musa, who takes a touch. And then, it's a really nice play from Musa,
yes,
too.
Yes, it is.
Really good, really nice touch. And then an outside of the boot generates a lot of power on the half volley with the outside of his boot and draws a good reflex save from Gonzalez. That was a nice play that went by kind of quickly in the game as well. Just moments later, McKinney misses a free header on a corner kick. So we're at this point getting just extremely unlucky. I feel like.
I think that's fair. I mean, unlucky's tough. It's a great save on Musa's chance, but to see the McKinney decision and the quality of that clipped ball into Ferreira, Ferreira cushioning a header there rather than trying to snap it at goal. And then Musa still has so much to do with a ball that goes into his chest from 4 yards away. And then to have the presence of mind to, after his touch with his chest, just immediately put your plant foot down and smack it with the outside of your right foot. It's just really good. What would you call it? Improvisation to get that shot off. So a lot of cool things on that sequence, which again, with the quality we have, this we can do this stuff and it's fun to watch. And I know other people were frustrated because of how tense a 1-0 soccer game is, but I just felt like I actually really just enjoyed watching us do some of these things on a soccer field.
I agree with that. But I also agree that it was tense because it was 1-0. And after that, McKinney misses the free header, which it should be mentioned. It's great to see us generate some real danger on a set piece. I back McKinney to do better on that opportunity most of the time. After that, things did sort of crumble a little bit for us. Now, I mean, we still won the game, so I'm not complaining about that, but it just didn't seem like it was clicking for most of the last 30 minutes. Now, Pulisic came off in around the 64 minute mark. Zardes and Morris came on for Ferreira and Weah around the 72nd minute.
Brendan Aaronson, by the way, in for Pulisic at 64. So we were replacing Pulisic with, I guess, what we would call a $30 million attacker in Brendan Aaronson at this point. That's, you can say that, right? If a team has turned down $30 million, then that makes Aaronson a $30 million attacker.
Is that that's a for sure true thing? That's like a Fab Romano thing?
Salzburg had the money on the table and said, we're keeping him.
Yeah. Man, I guess. Yeah.
They want a shot at Bayern. They're taking their shot at Bayern in the Champions League.
Give us Bayern. We want Bayern. Yeah, I don't know how much to get into the rest of the game. I mean, there's a few chances. Dest dances across the top of the box and taps it to Robinson in the 85th minute. It puts a decent right-footed effort on frame. El Salvador kind of slices us up in the 85th minute as well, left to right, and a cross comes in, and there's a glancing header from Rivas.
Hey, so I'm gonna throw this out there on this El Salvador chance, and it's we gotta stick to the brand here. There are real concerns I still have about Brendan Aaronson and his being a little brother, and I know it's kind of a bit, and it's kind of a joke, and he's got the hair and all this, but he really does have some little brother to his game. And I made a comp of all his games against actual grownups outside the Austrian league, just his last four games, two in the Champions League against Lille and Sevilla, and then our two qualifiers, Mexico and Jamaica, in the last window. And he has this tendency, and it's a real tendency because it cropped up over and over again, of flying into challenges, but not actually doing any real challenging, just hoping that just by running at somebody, they're going to panic and you'll get the ball. But so many of these grown up, wily, physical players just sidestep him really easily. And that's what happened on this play again. So that's a real thing that we kind of documented last week in the Discord. And that's what led to this El Salvador chance, is Aaronson doing all the puppy dog chasing, but finally just sprinting at a guy, and they just go past him just as easily as McKinney and Musa have been going past the El Salvador players. And it's not supposed to be like that. It's not supposed to be a symmetric relationship between us going past El Salvador players and El Salvador players going past us. So it's just another thing to keep an eye on for Aaronson. For all of the work rate that he has, there's still this tendency to pretend at that last moment of the actual challenge instead of just like blowing some, he doesn't blow people up. He doesn't run through them, especially when he is the lone defender in the challenge. He's really good at coming in as a secondary defender when someone already has a guy stood up and like being a huge nuisance and taking the ball. But when
poking the ball away,
when he is the defender coming in, like he just gets sidestepped over and over and over again.
Another thing I hadn't really noticed in this game, and I missed that discussion in the Discord. It's kind of hard to keep up with everything in the Discord, but I was going to say about Aaronson, you know, he didn't look threatening when he was on the ball, when he was getting the ball wide. Like it did look like there was no chance he was going to beat Tamakas. I think Tamakas was still in the game. So it doesn't, you know, for all my kvetching about Pulisic and all our real legitimate concerns about the way he's playing, I don't know. I don't think Aaronson is the solution, really. Neither looked good. Now Aaronson brought, you know, he brings that energy, and he did. There were a couple times where he danced across the zone 14, and like one time he found Robinson, and you know, some other okay moments, but I know there's some people are talking about like him pushing for a starting 11 spot, and I can't see that really.
Well, it's in that mythical full strength, right? That's what they're talking
right.
about.
Right. I'm saying like first choice 11. Yeah.
Yeah. Wea and Reyna aren't going anywhere in a full strength lineup for me at this point.
Right. I will mention, you know, I guess to sort of back up my somewhat wild suggestion that we should start Morris against Canada, that he did. Now, I don't think Morris had an incredibly effective performance either, but he did play that good ball at the back post for McKenney in the 89th minute. It's a good flick from Zardes to Aaronson. Aaronson brings it down, does well to bring it down. And this is what I was thinking about.
Hold on. Who hit that ball up to Zardes?
Was that Zimmerman?
I'm just making sure Matt Turner gets a little bit of love. Like the narrative of him just hoofing everything upfield. Like his long ball service was also putting it right on our guy's head. So again, it's hard to know how much of that is Turner's accuracy versus how much is our dominant players will just get to the ball ahead of El Salvador's players.
Okay, so Turner's gorgeous ball to Jazzy Zardes, flicked on to Aaronson. Aaronson brings it down, takes it across the field, plays it to Morris, and then Morris stands up and makes a nice play. I think he decides he's going to play it to the back post for McKenney. McKenney heads it back into the mixer and just doesn't quite connect with Zardes. So, you know, just a little positive moment from Jordan Morris.
I'm just going to piggyback on that too, because so like the McKenney header to Zardes, I don't think anyone's saying like Zardes should have done anything really with that ball or anyone really expected him to. But that's still the situation where if it's Jesus Ferreira, there's at least like this little chance that because of what he can do technically with the ball, like he can sort of make something of that. And it's another reason that I like Ferreira in that position, because I do think that like that his technical quality will keep some plays alive. Zardes will work to keep plays alive like crazy, but he won't necessarily be able to like keep the ball tight to his body under control the way Jesus Ferreira does.
Right.
Had to get one more plug in on the last element of the chronology for Jesus Ferreira.
Yeah. We skipped a lot of stuff, but I think that's okay. The it's fair to say the last 30 minutes, wouldn't you say? We're not the beautiful soccer that we referred to several times earlier in the timeline.
Totally. And I don't think we were intending to have it be that way. I should mention, like, it seemed like McKenney and Musa before Musa came out and Adams were all like struggling a little bit fitness wise, or at least with covering ground. And it might be, who knows, maybe taking guys on nonstop for the first 60 minutes has like an energy cost for the last 30 minutes where you might just not quite have as much in the tank. I thought it was actually apparent on that on that 85th minute one we were talking about where Aaronson got skipped past. The commitment and like energy from Musa and McKenney to get back wasn't necessarily there. And that's how it was so easy to move the ball across the field.
Yeah.
So that could be an issue. We got another big one coming up. And so if McKenney was limping by the end of the game,
Berhalter said he was okay. Which, you know, I suppose maybe he would say that. They may have been a little gassed. I did notice we were not winning a lot of second balls in that passage of the game. All right. So let's just wrap up this game. I mean, it's all in all very positive, I think. And we did create a ton of chances. The gods of variance are going to smile on us at some point.
I think we're about even. I think this was just one of those games where I would talk about Mexico having games like this a lot, where it's a very acceptable way to struggle. Like if we're struggling, but putting up 3xG, like that's not necessarily, that doesn't mean our whole performance is a shambles and we need to be terrified of what's playing out on the field. Like that was, for me, we did so many good things that often lead to goals. And that's really all when I'm evaluating a game, that's how I evaluate it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We need more from Pulisic. I think we could get a little more, I don't know, tidiness, sharpness from Sergiño Dest. I mean, everybody could have been a little sharper in this game.
Let's throw that out there too, because it's something I thought about with Jesus, where if that is him out of season, like in rusty, then if he does get a little of that polish back midseason, and that could be a lot of guys, because there are a lot of guys even in season who aren't playing. Sergiño Dest barely playing for Barca. So if this is what we look like out of season, then give it a couple of weeks into the MLS season and some of these guys getting back into the lineups in Europe. Maybe it'll be half an XG sharper.
Yeah. Yeah. So next up is Canada. They, as we mentioned, they beat Honduras 2-0 in San Pedro Sula, the scene of their getting absolutely shellacked like a decade ago. So that's a meaningful win for them. The scoreline does flatter them a bit, I think. It was a pretty even contest, and Honduras outpossessed Canada by about 60-40, which obviously doesn't, sometimes Canada's okay with that. That's not their goal to outpossess the opponent. And the XG in that game was, depending on which service you're looking at, I think Instat had it at like 1.4 to 0.7 Honduras over Canada, and Y Scout had it at like 1.1 to 0.7 or something like that.
Now, keep in mind, Canada scored on an own goal in the 10th minute. That's their first goal, which doesn't show up on XG.
Right.
And also is going to affect game state for how much they're chasing versus how much Honduras are chasing.
That's true. And also Jonathan David's goal which iced the game, was a very low XG goal. It was a lovely, lovely goal. A really good ball over the top. He takes it down with his chest and then chips the keeper from 25 yards or something like that. So in any case, Canada's doing what it needs to do, and they look good. And I think if we are to get a win on Sunday, it's going to probably take a performance on the level of our play in Cincinnati against Mexico, something like that. It does feel like anything could happen in Hamilton.
That's exactly right. And I'll just throw out that Canada could play anyway. I have no idea how they're going to approach us, whether they'll sit back the way they did in the opener in Nashville, or if they, not the opener, but our first game against them in Nashville, or if they'll come out and try to like play us and open up and see if they can sort of take the game to us, if you want to call it that. I have no idea what to expect. I know Alphonso Davies is out. Who's their center midfielder? Eustaquio, who was positive with COVID, has made it back and was on the bench available for that Honduras game, which was a bit of a surprise. So you got to imagine that he will be able to play, but it's going to be kind of a cool chess match. I feel like that this has been one of the more interesting chess matches in the region, is Herdman versus Berhalter.
Yeah. I mean, Herdman's got to get all the kudos right now. Top of the table. He's got this MLS heavy roster of his, and they just look really good all the time. And they have a great striker in Jonathan David, just like we do in Jesus Ferreira.
Thank you.
I'm expecting the 11 to be similar to what it was versus El Salvador. I mean, Berhalter's words were, we're going to evaluate everybody physically and, make decisions based on that. So let's hope it's not, we don't see a Sebastian Legette start. That would be hard on everybody, I believe.
We said who the subs were, so it was at least interesting that Luca De La Torre was in the, on the bench available, legit not in uniform. So, right. You know, I guess let your imagination run wild there with what that means.
And we don't have too long to let our imaginations run. The game is in, you know, many of you won't listen to this till Saturday. The game is in a day if you're in that camp, and if you're listening to it on Friday evening, you know, you could do the math. It's not that far away. Sunday at 3 p.m. The forecast in Hamilton is a high of 24. Now, it's a big difference between that and what's going to happen in St. Paul, because the high of 24 hits right at 3 o'clock, which is when the game kicks off. So it's going to be the warmest time of the day.
Yeah, and that sunshine on the face will be a real welcome element that they're not going to enjoy in St. Paul.
Yep, there will be no sunshine at 6 p.m. in St. Paul. And right now, the did I already say what the forecast is?
Say it again.
I mean, it has declined a lot in the last 48 hours, but it the last I saw was a high of 10 degrees, which we're not going to see at 6 o'clock, and a low of minus 9. So.
Like, all you can do is laugh about that. We're approaching dangerous, like, move the game indoors or postpone it territory, depending on what the wind chill kicks in at too, because that's air temperature, right?
Yeah.
All right. Right. We're not a meteorology podcast, but like we'll dabble a little bit. It's going to be bad.
Yeah. I mean, I hope if they're going to postpone it, that they make that decision pretty soon, because a lot of people are, like, including me, are flying to St. Paul next week. Well, 3-point Thursday. That's what it was. Upcoming 6-point Sunday. Let's do this. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you.